There are no ordinary people. You have never talked to a mere mortal.
Welcome to No Mere Mortals Cover to Cover Series. The Cover to Cover Series is a chronological journey through the moments in the Bible from Genesis to Revelation, centered on the main character of Jesus Christ. In 2020, the Lord directed the start of the Cover to Cover Series that originally began as weekly installments for Sunday morning youth teachings at a local church. In 2023, the Cover to Cover Series will move to being a podcast series, and Lord willing, will continue to be weekly installments.
Father, we come to you this morning, and Lord, I just echo the prayer that our hearts and minds would be open to receive you this morning. And Father, I just pray wherever your church is meeting, here in Oakdale, throughout the city, God, even in our state and country, wherever your people gather under your name to open up your word, would you just bless them? And God, would you just pour out your spirit upon us this morning, that we would experience you by your spirit through your word this morning. In your son's name. Amen. You guys can have a seat. So again, just to kind of put us in a little bit of perspective where we have been, guys, is so as you come to the book of Numbers, and I'll even say this to you guys, there's a little bit of timey-wimey jump stuff that you'll go from chapter to chapter. So even if you guys didn't know this, the Bible is not laid out chronologically, but we are going through a chronological view of Scripture while focused on Christ. And so where we are right now is we are coming out just over a year from where they've left Egypt. The nation of Israel has left Egypt. They camped in the wilderness of Sinai. They have built the tabernacle. And we saw in Exodus chapter 40, it says that it came to pass in the first month of the second year, on the first day of the month, the tabernacle was raised up. So when you get to Mount Sinai, again, you can kind of lose this, but you come through the Exodus, they've gone through the Red Sea, they finally make it to Mount Sinai, and by the time the tabernacle is actually built and raised up for the first time, it's been 1 year. Then you get to the book of Leviticus, and when we find out, when you get to actually Numbers chapter 1, on the first day of the second month in the second year. So you see that the book of Leviticus actually only takes about 1 month time. Again, ironically, I took longer to teach you guys through the book of Leviticus than all of God to give to the nation of Israel. But 1 month is where they were chronologically. Now we come to, as we're going to be looking at chapters 9 and 10. I'm just going to let you guys know this. Is as we get into chapter 10, we're going to jump ahead about another 19 days. All right? So from chapters 1 to 10, you have about kind of a 19-day jump. Okay? I know this is kind of like, okay, where are we going? Just want to put us on chronological where we are. We're at Mount Sinai. It's just been over a year since they have built the tabernacle. Now it's been a couple months from that point where they've given the law. Moses can now enter into the tabernacle. The beginning of the book of Numbers shows us that. We looked at that as we went through the book of Leviticus. Moses can now enter into the tabernacle. But as we start off in chapter 9, it actually is going to revisit when they first brought up the tabernacle. And what we read there is when they first raised up the tabernacle, that God's presence fell on it like fire, and that he has fallen down on this tabernacle, now gone from the burning bush to the burning mountain, to now his presence is outpouring upon the tabernacle itself. And so as we back up there and you get to that moment, is that's kind of what we're going to pick up, is because God gave instructions to how, now that his presence is here in the midst of his camp, God gives instructions to the book of Numbers how he wants the camp to be laid out. In fact, the book of Numbers gets its name because the book of Numbers is bookend by two census. And so God has them take a census and tells them how to lay out the camp. Now, this is actually not the most interesting, nor is it actually the bulk and major point of the book of Numbers. The book of Numbers gets its name because in the Greek, they saw the census and said, hey, well, the number, the name for census is like a numbering, and then the Latin Vulgate picked that up, and so then we have it, the book of Numbers. The Hebrew actually gave it the title of Bimbadar, and what that actually simply means is in the wilderness. So this fourth book written by Moses, the fourth book of the Bible, is about the nation of Israel's time in the wilderness. It's a time of rebellion. It's a time of discipline, but also a time of redemption and new life and the warfare that is in this new life. So with that, if you guys can actually look with me in Numbers chapter 9, but go down to verse 15 for me. Verse 15. Now, on that day, the tabernacle was raised up. Again, this is the first month of the second year on the first day of that month. The cloud covered the tabernacle, the tent of the testimony, from evening until morning. It was above the tabernacle like the appearance of fire. So it was always. The cloud covered it by day and the appearance of fire by night. Whenever the cloud was taken up from above the tabernacle, after that the children of Israel would journey, and in the place where the cloud settled, there the children of Israel would pitch their tents. At the command of the Lord, the children of Israel would journey, and at the command of the Lord, they would camp. As long as the cloud stayed above the tabernacle, they remained encamped. Even when the cloud continued long, many days above the tabernacle, the children of Israel kept the charge of the Lord and did not journey. So it was. When the cloud was above the tabernacle a few days, according to the command of the Lord, they would remain encamped and according to the command of the Lord would journey. So it was when the cloud remained only from evening until morning, when the cloud was taken up in the morning, then they would journey. Whether by day or by night, whenever the cloud was taken up, they would journey. Whether it was 2 days, a month, or a year that the cloud remained above the tabernacle, the children of Israel remained encamped and not journey. But when it was taken up, they would journey. At the command of the Lord, they remained encamped, and at the command of the Lord, they journeyed. They kept the charge of the Lord at the command of the Lord by the hand of Moses. So just right there, if you guys caught that, this is one of those moments I think we maybe especially, again, lifers, we've grown up in church, we've heard about this. Oh, yeah, they're led by the cloud by day, the fire by night. We just kind of say this. But there's something interesting to me that happened in that chapter is where this was a day-by-day leading. They did not know how long. It's not like God said, okay, priests, we're going to be here for about a year, so just let everybody know. In fact, it said sometimes 2 days. Now, you're going to get in your mind, again, as you go through the book of the book of Numbers, how much it took to set up the camp, how much it would place. You had these priests, the tribe of Levi, all had different roles and responsibilities, and it literally said in here, sometimes that would be 2 days. God would move to an area, set up camp. We set up camp. 2 days later, you're doing it all again. You would pack everything up, and he'd move, and be like, okay, so we're going to be moving for like a year. He'd move like 2 more days and then stop and go, all right, put it all right back down. And so there's this continual waiting and trusting in the Lord to be led by him. So many of us, it's like we want God to lay out our life plan for the next 18 years. God, guide me, lead me, and we'll come to him in all sincerity, lead my life. And yet what we're really saying is, but make sure that you have it on a nice, even timetable that I can know ahead so I can prep and prepare for your leading. And what God's instilling here is, no, this is a daily thing. That I have an overall trajectory, but every day was waiting and watching, Lord, where do you want me to be? And God, I will go where you tell me to go, whether it's 2 days, whether it's a month, whether it's a year. Where you go, I will go. Where you lead, I will follow, no matter what. Now, that sounds good. And as we go through this next chapter, chapter 10, again, there's going to be things where we can find ourselves on a Sunday morning echoing, yes, Lord, I too. And yet I said that this is a book of rebellion and discipline, but also a book of redemption and new life and the warfare that's in it. So many times we say, I will follow you, Lord. And then tells us to go somewhere and we're like, but I don't like going over there. That looks difficult. And as much as we could try and, again, put this on these people, how could they not? They had the fire. They had the cloud. We have his word and the indwelling of his Holy Spirit. Let's be slow to point fingers at others and judge how they failed in their walk with God. But instead be encouraged that even when they were faithless, he was faithful to his word and what he had promised to do. Numbers chapter 10. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, make 2 silver trumpets for yourself. You shall make them of hammered work. You shall use them for calling the congregation and for directing the movement of the camps. When they blow both of them, all the congregation shall gather before you at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. But if they blow only one, then the leaders of the heads of divisions of Israel shall gather to you. When you sound the advance, the camps that lie on the east side shall begin their journey. When you sound the advance the second time, then the camp shall lie on the south shall begin their journey. They shall sound the call for them to begin their journeys. And when the assembly is to be gathered together, you shall blow, but not sound the advance. The sons of Aaron, the priests, shall blow the trumpets, and these shall be to you as an ordinance forever throughout your generations. I see this, and you have this moment, and I don't know if you guys, again, try and put yourselves in the mindset, why do I go through the time and the geographies? We're trying to put ourselves at this is historical events. These are real people, real lives, they live this, and this is God going, okay, I've got millions of people out in the desert. How do we know when it's time to go? Okay, so the fire moves, so does everyone just, do I just grab my stuff and just go? Do I just follow? How do we do this? Again, try and put your, just imagine all of us in this room when we're trying to direct a who would you rather, and there's this back and forth of, I don't even know what to do here, and here's millions of people camped around waiting and go, well, but what do I do? And even there's a sincere that maybe there's an actual practicality of go, okay, God, I see you're leading, I see you're directing, but what do you actually want me to do? What do you want me to do in that? And what I love here is I think of passages like 1 Corinthians chapter 14, 33, that says, for God is not a God of disorder, but of peace, as in all the congregations of the Lord's people. It's what God does is he institutes not only how you're going to lay out the camp, he sets out a system of how you are going to call and direct people. So he's got these trumpets. And if they hear one blast of the trumpet, they know, okay, that one blast, that means that the heads of the tribes, they're going to go to the middle of the camp. They're going to go to the tabernacle and find out, what are we doing here? If you heard two blasts, they know, hey, whole congregation, listen up. Because when you hear the two blasts, it is time to start getting your stuff together because we're about to move. And then even from there, if you notice, there was signaling. It says when you sound the advance. So there was one blast, okay, the heads, two blasts, everyone's getting ready to go. And then there was a sound. There was an advance trumpet. And it says, and when you hear that, you know, this side, you move first. Then you would hear the advance again. This side, you move. So this is, once again, a God of order, directing his people, not so that there would be chaos, but peace. That he is a God, I'm a God of decency and order. I'm not calling you to a life of chaos. And that if he calls you, he's going to direct you. And so there's a very real question for you to ask at moments. Go, okay, God, I see your leading. I see what you want. What do you want me to do? And know that, if you're honest in that, he will guide you practically, directly. And I know that's not always easy to do. But this is a God who so wants you to know where he wants you to be, which is always right with him. Also, just as a quick aside, some people make a connection here. I tried to do the math. I didn't quite see it. So I'm like, okay, maybe they did. But there's still something here that's kind of fun about, think of the book of Revelation, and we hear about the seven trumpet blasts. God's calling of his people together, giving them marching orders. And here again, we're seeing these things represented to us with these horns of go, okay, it's the time to gather and it's the time to move. Continue on verse 9. sorry about that. When you go to war in your land against the enemy who oppresses you, then you shall sound an alarm with trumpets, and you will be remembered before the Lord your God, and you will be saved from your enemies. Also, in the day of your gladness, in your appointed feast, and at the beginning of your months, you shall blow the trumpets over your burnt offerings and over the sacrifices for your peace offerings, and they shall be a memorial for you before your God. I am the Lord your God. So I guess I want you guys to also, again, what he's preparing them for. And if you guys, I don't know, if you guys are getting in that mindset, I want you guys to start preparing that. What should I even do? When you think of horn sounds, at least this is where my brain goes, and maybe because after my grandfather recently passed and we went to his funeral, there's a certain song that's played on the trumpet, and they play the taps, and you know, if you've heard that song, if you know that sound, you know it means something. There's also a song that if you go to a baseball game, they play a certain tune, and in fact, it can get an entire mass of people to say one word. All they have to do is play a song, da-da-da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da-da. Oh, goodness. You're at a baseball game. Da-da-da-da-da-da. There we go. You can get a whole mass of people to say a word by trumpet sound. When my daughter was a few years younger, this is something that I hope doesn't completely scar her, but I had told her to stay in her room. It's nighttime. Don't sneak out. Don't stay in your room. She had made me watch Star Wars once or twice with me. And there's a certain sound that just kind of creates a building. If you've ever heard the alarm from the Death Star going up, you know that sound. And I was watching this little girl as she made her way from her bed to the door. And I took that phone of mine, took her baby monitor, cranked up that alarm. And the moment she stepped foot outside of that door, bwah, bwah, I mean, she spins, what's going on? That's chaos. That's not what God does. But there is an alarm. You know something's going on. These trumpet sounds, they had a purpose. And what he's saying here is go, and there's going to be a song. Maybe it's the da-da-da-da-da-da. There we go. Maybe it's some other tune. But they knew when that alarm goes off, it's wartime. There's a time to gather. There's a time for us to travel. And then there's a time he says, understand that what you're gearing up for is you're gearing up for war. And when you sound that, not only will you know, but everyone around you. Now we come to verse 11. This is where we finally come to the leaving of Mount Sinai. So Numbers 10, verse 11 says, now it came to pass on the 20th day of the second month in the second year that the cloud was taken up from above the tabernacle of testimony. And the children of Israel set out from the wilderness of Sinai on their journeys. When the cloud settled down in the wilderness of Paran, so they started out for the first time according to the command of the Lord by the hand of Moses. The standard of the camp of the children of Judah set out first according to their armies. Over, over their army was Nishan, the son of Aminadab. So, what happens is the alarm is given, the trumpets are blown, and Judah's tribe sets out first. This is going to be a pattern we're going to continue to see through these people. Verse 15, over the army of the tribe of Israel, Issachar was Nethael, the son of Zuar, and over the army of the tribe of the children of Zebulun was Elab, the son of Helon. Then the tabernacle was taken down, and the sons of Gershon and the sons of Moriah set out carrying the tabernacle. So Judah sets out. Trumpet blows. They know what they're supposed to do. Judah sets out. Then what we have is we have two of three of the tribes of Levi who are responsible for tabernacle things. Two of them start breaking stuff down. There's going to be one who's going to come up later, and they have the holy instruments. So it says that the standard of the camp of Reuben set out according to their armies. Over their army was Eleazar, son of Shedeur. Over the army of the tribe of the children of Simeon was Shelulel, the son of Zerahashadai. Not, you guys can read it. Over the army of the tribe of the children of Gad was Elasaphath, the son of Duel. Then the Kohathites, that's the other Israelites, set out carrying the holy things. The tabernacle would be prepared for their arrival. The standard of the camp of the children of Ephraim set out according to their armies. Over the army was Elishama, the son of Amahud. Over the armies of the tribe of the children of Manasseh was Gamaliel, the son of Pirahuz. And over the army of the tribe of the children of Benjamin was Abadan, the son of Gideoni. The standard of the camp of the children of Dan, the rear guard of all the camps, set out according to their armies. Over their army was Ahazer, the son of Amashadadai. Over the army of the tribe of the children of Asher was Pagiel, the son of Orkin. Over the army of the tribe of the children of Naphtali was Ahurai, the son of Enan. Thus the order of the march of the children of Israel, according to their armies, when they began their journey. So, again, you guys can kind of go through all that. We went through it quick, but you have the tribe of Judah. Now, in chapter 2 of Numbers, we get a breakdown of the tribes and how they're supposed to be set up around the camp. Then what happens here is we were told between there in chapter 9, which was actually back in Exodus time period, but we're told that they were told how they were going to march out according to the trumpets. Now that that's going, what we see is that Judah sets off first. Then you have two of the three of the priests who start gathering things up. Then you start having other armies, other tribes tracking them behind. Then you have the third of the Israelites who are bringing up all the holy items. And then Dan takes up the rear guard. For those who take notes, I want you guys to kind of make a mark of that. Dan is the rear guard because that's going to be a pattern for this tribe for a long time. They are the rear guard. They are the ones who stand in the gap. They are the shield. Verse 28 says, thus was the order of the march of the children of Israel according to their armies when they began their journey. Now Moses said to Hobab, the son of Reuel the Midianite, Moses' father-in-law, we're setting out for the place which the Lord said, I will give it to you. Come with us, and we will treat you well. For the Lord has promised good things to Israel. And he said to him, I will not go, but I will depart to my own land and to my relatives. So Moses said, please do not leave. Inasmuch as you know how we are to camp in the wilderness. Inasmuch as you know how we are to camp in the wilderness, and you are to be our eyes, and it shall be if you go with us. Indeed, it shall be that whatever good the Lord will do to us, the same will be to you. So they departed from the mountain of the Lord on a journey for 3 days. And the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord went before them for 3 days' journey to search out a resting place for them. So we'll get into this section a little bit later. We'll dive into it because there's some things that happen here. So they go to move, and there's some question over who this Hobab is. It says father-in-law. Okay, well, we've met Jethro, the father-in-law. So who is this? Does Jethro have four names or two titles and two names? Some people go that route. They say that's the same guy, different names, different title. I don't tend to lean that way. Some people lean that this is actually the brother-in-law. When you get into the language, when you hear things like grandfather or grandson, ancient language didn't have that language. So what you're actually looking at is somebody who holds the title, who is now head of the family of this area. There's another view. Again, we'll get into this stuff a little bit later. It's not pertinent to what we're looking at right now. But is this yet father-in-law number two? Does Moses take up another wife? We see later that Moses' sister and brother ain't so happy with his wife choices. So we'll get into that stuff a little bit later. But what happens here is Moses loves his family member, not in the nation of Israel, but he loves this family member. And he says, hey, why don't you come with us? Some people mistakenly, say that this is Moses not having faith. Because he says, hey, why don't you go with us and help us out when we travel around? He didn't say lead us. Check it again. He doesn't say, hey, tell us where to go. He says, we know we're going to follow after God. But he does something that I believe is actually very smart. He's like, but you know this desert land. I personally believe geographically where we are is we're still in the land of Midian. Mount Sinai is there. And this is a guy who lives in this area. And he says, hey, you know this wilderness and you know how to live in it. So when we get somewhere that the Lord leads us, why don't you help? Like, you know how to do this. If you guys have ever tried going tent camping, again, we talked about this for some people. All good for you, those who like to play homeless. Happy for you. Not my bag. And so this would be like, okay, God, if you're calling me to tent life it, wait. Matt, you know how to do this stuff. You think this is fun. Hey, when God calls me to go over here, can you go with me and like help me set up the tent and know how to do all this stuff? That's the equivalent I believe that's happening here. And he even says, hey, because God's promised good things for us. And when he pours out his blessing on us, it's going to happen for you too. So Moses' family member goes with him. Now, as we come to this moment, hey, those are a tone that we all know to do something with. Maybe for some of you, it's get up, wake up. Okay, now, we're going to pause for just a moment. And I told you again that in Numbers chapter 2, we were told how the camp was supposed to lay out. And in fact, in Numbers chapter 2, very end, it says in verse 34, thus the children of Israel did according to all that the Lord commanded Moses. So they camped by their standards, and so they broke up camp, each one by his family, according to their father's houses. So in Numbers chapter 2, we're not going to go through all the census, guys. I'm going to do some recap for you. But in Numbers chapter 2, we're given a giant kind of summary and census of all the people. And then we're told, hey, this is what you're going to do. You're going to break up into four groups, three tribes per group, all right? And then they're actually supposed to camp according to their standard. Interesting that the word standard there is the word degel. Degel is actually the same word for banner. So, again, we can kind of think through this. Think of, again, my brain goes to different places. You guys remember Robin Hood animated, you know, and they would march around with the flags. I'm sure there's other cool movies out there now and whatnot that show, like these old-timey Lord of the Rings might be one that you guys have. They have the giant banners, and you know House of such and such is under that banner. That's what they would do. So they would have these four banners and say, okay, this section is going to be under this banner. That's standard. Now, according to rabbinical tradition, the standard of Judah, so the sign that was on their banner, was a lion. The sign for Reuben, or the sign on their banner, was that of a man or a man's head. For Ephraim, it was a figure of an ox, and for Dan, it was a figure of an eagle. So they would break it up by Judah, then they would go Reuben, Ephraim, Dan. And each one, and so you would have these different images around the camp. And so the banner would have the banner of a lion, the banner of a man's head, the banner of an ox, and the banner of an eagle. And the reason this is interesting is when you see those images, by the time we get to the book of Ezekiel, and he's describing the creatures surrounding the throne of God, the four creatures that you're going to see is the lion, the man, the ox, and the eagle. And so you understand what you're seeing there, and what's going on is as God directed these people to raise this banner up around the tabernacle, is that there's this image of the tabernacle that intersect God's domain. Remember what God said the tabernacle was. It was a shadow of what? His heavenly realm, his heavenly throne room, and surrounding that are these four creatures. Now, the reason this is also important for you guys to know is you might come across somebody someday, some internet warrior, some friend at school. They think they're going to throw down some knowledge, and if you get caught off on historical accuracy, you might get there as well. Get flat-footed a little bit. And they say something like to you, you know that the nation of Israel, they just copied Egypt's battle layout when they encamped to move around, that whole thing was just actually a copy of what Egypt was doing. Now, that could sound like something like, no, they can't. Don't bat it. Yes, they did. It's a copy of what Egypt laid out. My question to you is, where did Egypt get the idea? See, we've gone through and went through the book of Exodus is to understand that these gods that they worshipped were these fallen angels who once stood around the throne room of God. And they knew exactly what that looked like. And they come down and they are instructing Egypt how you too, listen to the language, can be like God. Set up your structure and be like this. And you know what? Just put me as your deity at the middle. And so one of the most famous battle layouts that you see in history is Ramesses II. By the way, very interesting how that correlates with us in our Exodus. Ramesses II lays it out, and when you see how he lays out his camp, you could almost go, oh my goodness, it's like a copy and paste of what we study the tabernacle. And that's exactly right. Is what you have here, is you have that layout, is here comes the enemy to once again counterfeit God's design. They counterfeit God's design, and they say, this is what a mighty creature looks like. This is what it is to be like a god, and here is what surrounds him. Now imagine now Moses, a once general in the army of Egypt. And God starts giving him the layout and blueprint of this is what you're going to build. This is what it looks like. What does Moses know right away? Oh, I know what we're building. See, we're not going to be a bunch of refugees running for our lives. We're building a military base. God is declaring war to his enemies. He is saying once again, you think you're going to take my imagery. You're going to take my, no, this is my throne. This is what it looks like to be the one on the throne. And by the way, how did that work out for the Pharaoh who thought himself to be a deity when he faced off against Yahweh who he questioned? See, it's not an issue of whether or not two sides have a similar military layout. Is ask yourself, when the two armies collided, who won? Yahweh, the warrior God who goes before his people, the champion of Israel. Verse 34, as we wrap up, says, and the cloud of the Lord was above them by day when they went out from the camp. So it was whenever the ark set out, Moses said, again, this language, Moses knowing what he has built, the trumpets have been blown, they're moving out, and as the cloud would rise up, Moses would yell out, rise up, O Lord. Let your enemies be scattered, and let those who hate you flee before you. And when it rested, he said, return, O Lord, to the many thousands of Israel. I want you guys to catch something that Moses yelled. He didn't say, rise up, O God, and knock in the teeth all the people who talk trash about me. Rise up, O God, and smash all the people who don't like me. No, he says, rise up and scatter your enemies. You're the commander. You're the king. You are the one and only God who we follow. Scatter your enemies from before you. And the reason, guys, this is so important to know right now, probably more than any time in our nation's history, is to understand who your enemy is. See, there's a lot of stuff happening right now where we are being tricked by an enemy to turn on each other and to fight each other. And there's division and there's anger and there's hatred. And yet we're told in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12, our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces for evil in the heavenly realms. Now, I told you that the book of Numbers gives us the layout. So this is roughly what the layout would be, if you guys can see on the screens. Sure, you can kill a couple of lights. What I'm due for you is we're going to go one slide over. I'll give you guys the numbers. So here's the quick census. We're going to summarize chapter 2. So Numbers chapter 2 says Judah, there's roughly about 186,100. Reuben, there was 151,450. Ephraim, there is 108,100. And Dan, there is 157,600. So that is the layout of the camp. That is the census number. Now again, I want you guys to go to the mindset. This is God's military battle camp. The nation of Israel knew what they built. Their enemies knew what they built. And when they proceeded in a military fashion with Judah, Lion of Judah, our Christ, going before. Yahweh's presence out before leading with the Lion of Judah out in front. Dan is going to take up the rear guard. And they would march in that way. When we get near the end of the book, there's going to be a man by the name of Balaam. And he's going to stand up on top of a high mountain. And he's going to look down on this camp. And he's going to be, he's basically paid to try and pronounce cursings over the nation of Israel. And every time he goes to speak, he can't help but speak blessings. And the king who paid him is getting mad. He's like, I don't know. And he goes to do it, and more blessings come out. And we'll get there. But I want you guys to again think about the God who goes before you to battle. The God who is leading and directing. And it says when the cloud rested, the camp would rest, and they would rest in this formation. But as Balaam stood over, this is not the numerical representation. As Balaam stood on that mountain looking at God's people at rest, Jason, if you can go to the next one, this is the numeric representation of what he saw. As you stood on the mountain and would look down on the nation of Israel from afar, maybe that one's a little bit harder to see. Let's go to the banner. Next one. This is what Balaam saw. When you look down and you take the numeric representation and you lay out by what God has called his people in his order, and when his people find rest, his presence in the middle, the cross before. As Colossians chapter 2, verse 13 and 15 tells us, and you being dead in your trespasses and the uncircumcision of your flesh, he has made alive together with him, having forgiven you all trespasses, having wiped out the handwriting of requirements that was against us, which was contrary to us. And he has taken it out of the way, having nailed it to the cross, having disarmed the principalities and powers. He made a public spectacle of them, triumphing over them. He has been declaring since the moment these people left Egypt, as he laid out his military conquest, that he's the God who goes before, and when his people find rest, it has always been the same. And he announced it to him even before they realized. He was telling them, my people will find rest at the cross. And the cross of Jesus Christ, as his enemies thought that they had had a victory over him, it says that God had made a spectacle of them, as if he had told them from the beginning, as if he said from Genesis chapter 3, there's coming a day that one, that seed from the woman, will come and will smash the head of the serpent. He will be wounded, but he will be the wounded victor. And our peace will come by the rest of the cross. Let's pray. God, we thank you for this morning. We thank you for this time in your word. And Father, I just pray that as we come before you, that as we see this, that once again, we are just encouraged about the victory you have won for us. And Father, that as always, we find rest in your completed work. So, Father, I pray for anyone in this room here today that has not come to that place in their life where they can fully rest, not trying to earn their salvation, but rest in your work, in the conquest and military might of your strong arm. That, Lord, we would follow where you call, move when you tell us to move, and find rest in you, as you have always been a God of order to bring peace for all your people. In your son's name, amen.
The Cover to Cover series is part of No Mere Mortal. The No Mere Mortal ethos derives from the biblically grounded and inspired work of C.S. Lewis in The Weight of Glory. You can find more No Mere Mortal content, including the Cover to Cover series, on our website at nomeremortal.org. Follow us on Twitter, Truth, Facebook, YouTube, Rumble, and most major podcasting services. Subscribe, follow, like, comment, leave a review, and share. The music you've heard has been provided by Sicko, that's C-I-K-K-0, and you can find him at YouTube at Sicko's Beat Suck 797. My name is Bryce, and you are No Mere Mortal.